at the end of our series on love and relationships, which I hope you've enjoyed and I hope you've found helpful. And we start off by looking at how we are made for love, made for relationships. And we looked at 1 John chapter 4. And I'm just going to read verses 9 to 11, because this was our sort of starting place for the whole series. And it says, "This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. This is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another." So we saw, as we looked at that, that Jesus kind of sets the standard for relationships, a standard of faithfulness and a standard of sacrifice. And we've been looking at how that works in our friendships, in our relationships in singleness, in dating, in marriage. And you might have thought all the way through this series, you might have thought, so far, so good, actually, because even when my relationships are hard, Jesus is going to pour his endless, faithful, sacrificial love into me. So I don't have to love people in my own strength. He's going to help me love them, which is great. And you might think, oh, good, I've got that sorted. But there is one type of relationship that we haven't looked at yet. I've just got a video that might help us. I hope.
Anyway, he changed my Facebook status to Ben died last Tuesday, and I didn't.
Look, why do you have to be so childish?
I don't care who started it.
How can you not care who started it? You're a history teacher.
Yes,
but history is about who started it.
Well, that's...
I've decided I don't want to be a vet anymore. I want to be an astronaut.
Girls can't be astronauts.
What?
I think they can, Ben.
No, they can't, because they can't throw.
Why would an astronaut need to know how to throw?
Well, what if there's a giant alien jellyfish attack and the only weapon you have is spanners to throw at them?
Anyway, girls can throw.
Interestingly, there is evidence that the way the female shoulder is put together does make it difficult for girls to throw a ball hard.
Ow!
That was hard, though.
Karen!
Ow! So was that.
Karen, I told you before, no throwing fruit at Dad.
Families. Ooh. Is anyone's family like that? Don't put your hand up if your family were in the room, because that could be awkward. But yeah, family, right? Have you ever been annoyed by a little brother, bossed around by a big sister? Maybe your parents are really embarrassing. Maybe you throw fruit at them sometimes. I don't think I've ever done that. But yeah, family. Or maybe, actually, on a more serious level, you've had to deal with real struggles in your family, real conflict. And that's actually a reality for many people. Maybe your parents' marriage has broken up or is in the process of breaking up. Maybe your marriage has that story. Or maybe actually your family aren't really okay with the whole church thing and don't like the fact that you come here. And that can be a real source of difficulty and conflict, whatever age you are. So maybe, like many people, there's actually real pain in your family life, and that can affect generation after generation. Because the truth is, families can be hard. They can be hard to love. But that passage from 1 John that I read doesn't just say we should show the love that Jesus showed us to one another, except our families. Our families are kind of included in that. We are called to love in a way that sets us apart. So how can we do this with our families? How do we love the annoying little brother? So we've got David, the pastor, to speak to us about this topic today. So if we just welcome David. I'm gonna now awkwardly try and sit on this stool. Brilliant. So yeah, David is our pastor here, and I'm just gonna start by asking David to just briefly share some of his family background.
Okay, so my family, I have a family I grew up in, and then I have a family now. Let me start with the family I have now. My wife is Laura, and she and I have three children. We've got Lila, who's 10, Amy, who's 7, and Jonah, who's 3. And it's probably worth knowing that we are not a perfect family. We have our fair share of challenges. If you come to have a meal with us, sometimes people are very surprised at how noisy it is. I grew up in Africa where often the children wouldn't say a word at the meal tables, whereas if any of the rest of us can get a word in when my son Jonah is speaking at the meal table, that is a miracle. So we're kind of a family at that kind of stage of life. And in Brighton, with all the joys and challenges that that has. So that's kind of us as a family. And then I grew up in a family with my mum and dad, who were also involved in missions work and Christian work. So they were believers. And I think one of the things I found most helpful from them as I grew up was that they really helped me see that I needed to grow my own faith in Christ. That just because they were Christians didn't automatically make me a Christian. Let me say that again. Just because your parents are Christians doesn't automatically make you a Christian. And one of the things that I was also really thankful for them for is that they helped me see that I really needed then to get into this book, God's Word, for myself. And one of the things they helped me with was to see that they weren't perfect. So they shared some of their struggles and failures and helped me see that the whole thing about the Bible is not only is there truth about how we should live, but there's grace for when we mess up. And again, I would just say about my family, I grew up in great family, love them to bits, but they're not perfect either. And one of the things in that was not just learning and relating to my folks, but I have an older sister and a younger sister. So, I used to annoy them both a lot and then get told off. So that's just a little eye-opener in my family there. And we grew up. As I was growing up in Kenya, in Africa, which again, the way they do family there is very different. They have big kind of, sort of a lot of your relatives come and live with you as well. So that kind of line between a sister or a cousin is very kind of blurred. An uncle and aunt and a friend, that gets blurred. Just as kind of like you do family together. And so that was a kind of learning curve here. So we as a family try to do a bit of that even here as well. There you go. Is that good for starters?
Brilliant, brilliant. So the first thing that I thought we could start with today was the fact that some of you might be familiar with it, the bit in the Bible where it talks about how we should honour our parents. And I was just wondering if you could share a bit with us about what does that mean? What does it mean to honour our parents? And how do we do that? And why should we do that, apart from the fact that it says it in the Bible?
Cool. I want to just start with a thought on this that I've been wrestling with. Is there any other relationship in the Bible that is more important, other than your relationship with God, than your relationship with your parents? Is there any other relationship that's more important? I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, there's a whole lot in the Bible about my relationship with my parents. And then I remember the bit where it says, you know, when you get married, for this reason, a man, interestingly, it's the man, not the woman, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife. And there's a sense of that there's a leaving and a cleaving of the family. And I think there's something in our culture of when you kind of hit 18, there's part of that leaving that begins to happen. So that, you know, guys and girls, you kind of, there's a learning and growing in independence. But interestingly, all the stuff about honor your parents doesn't end even there. I think there's something about the honoring your parents, though, that does change as you get older. And I want to take us to Ephesians chapter 6, just so I've been thinking about this a little bit. And Ephesians chapter 6 says this. It says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment, with a promise, so that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on the earth." Let me read that again. Children, here you go, I learned it when I was young. I got told to learn it. "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right." Here's what I used to get told. It doesn't say, "Children, obey your parents, for they are right." It says, "Children, obey your parents." What does it say? "Children, obey your parents, for this
is right. Children, obey your parents because this is right. There's a rightness, an appropriateness. Whatever country, whatever culture you're in, there's an appropriateness in children obeying your parents. For this is right. It's fitting. You see, there's something about the way we treat our parents, particularly when we're children, particularly I think when we're kind of under 18, before we've kind of left home. There's something appropriate in modeling obedience. Not because our parents ever get everything right. Your parents are not perfect. My parents are not perfect. But there's something appropriate about obeying them. And this is the kind of way the Bible puts it across. It says that authority is a good thing. Can you say that back to me? Authority is a good thing. So that God is a God who exercises authority and he establishes those in authority. He establishes governments. He gives children parents. And we learn to relate to God by how we relate to our parents. Did you know that? You learn to relate to God by how you relate to your parents. So the Ten Commandments, which then he comes on to, he says, honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on earth. This commandment, which is the fifth commandment, is the first one that's got a promise. It basically says, if you do this, there's going to be blessing, not just in the future in heaven, blessing now, long life on earth. It's an amazing promise. And actually, the Jews believed that the Ten Commandments had five of them which were Godward. Here was the way I remember the Ten Commandments. First, honor your father and mother. I learned this from Mike Bray. You might have learned this as well from Mike Bray. First, honor your father and mother. Second, cut out idols. Third, watch your words. Fourth, remember the Sabbath. Fifth, honor your parents. First five. The Jews believed that the first five were Godward. They were all about our relationship with God. The next five, don't kill, don't commit adultery, don't steal and get your fingers chopped off, don't lie, and don't grab, don't covet. Those next five were all about how you related to others. But you say, hey, the fifth one, that was about how I related to my parents. Surely that's like another person. But no. The Jews saw that as how you were related to God, because it was all about how you learnt to submit to authority. Honor your father and mother. And I think one of our big challenges, Katie, in the West is that basically we've believed a lie that says, well, because my parents aren't perfect, and because authority is fundamentally a bad thing, that we're going to, you know, as it were, put two fingers up to our parents. And actually, the Bible talks in 2 Timothy about how one of the signs of the last days, one of the signs that sort of wickedness has kind of spiraled out of control, is that people will be disobedient to their parents. Lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. Isn't that quite striking? So this honor your parents thing, guys, it's an amazingly important thing to learn for the sake of your relationship with God. To learn to submit even when you don't like it. And it is not easy. I used to find it really hard. I none of us enjoy it, do we? But actually, one of the things I've discovered was that sometimes when I didn't like what my parents were telling me to do, actually they were doing it for my own good. They wanted me to learn that it was important to take responsibility, to learn how to care for my sister even when I didn't want to. And you know what? I'm so glad that they taught me those things. And one of the things that I think in our relationships, our families, we don't often realize the good intentions that our parents have got. And we don't always realize the pressures that they're under as well. And that's one of the reasons I think it is important to honor your parents even and respect them, even when they really are embarrassing. And believe you me, I knew what that was like. And believe already my kids tell me, David, you're embarrassing. You know, Daddy, you're embarrassing me. So that's part of growing up as well. But don't underestimate how important that honor your parents is. And can I just say to the older ones of us here, keep honoring your parents. It's not easy as they get older. They repeat things. They need more help. But I want to honor some of you. I know, just think of, you know, like Margaret. I remember when I first came to Brighton, you used to look after your mum who was living with you. And just want to honor you for what you did over those years. I know that others here have made sacrifices for their parents in different seasons. And I want to say, keep doing that. It's really important.
That's great. So your parents obviously really love Jesus, and it just exudes from them and exudes from you that they've encouraged you in your faith from a young age. What would you say to anybody whose parents perhaps aren't Christians, and in fact actually really don't like the fact that they're involved in church and try and sort of stop them from that kind of involvement, or even not people's parents, but perhaps their children or other family members? How can they love their parents well in that? How can they honour their parents well in that situation?
Great question. And I think this is probably even more important because your parents are watching you. They're watching how you're going to respond now that you believe and they don't. And the promise, that the command to honor your parents isn't conditional on whether your parents are believers or not. Actually, it's just a command. And so then it becomes the challenge of, you know, well what if they don't like what I'm doing? They don't like me reading my Bible, or they don't like me going to church. And that's, I think, where you need real wisdom. And it's probably not one of those things where there's a clear kind of, well, you know, you must do this or you mustn't do that. I think it's one where you need to work out in your own heart, how do I, in a respectful way, keep making sure I grow in my faith? Because your faith is really vital. And probably the way I would take this to help us understand a bit more about that is when the Bible talks about authorities and governments, it says to Christians, you've got to obey governments and authorities. Now, at the time when those letters were written, that most of the governments and authorities, all of them, weren't Christian. So it wasn't saying obey them because they're Christian, but it said obey them because they're appointed by God. And so the same would be true, I think, if your parents aren't Christians and you're trying to honor them. But it does then say, except when they are asking you to do something which is against God's will, or plainly written in the Bible. So, you know, one of the reasons we've got this Jesus is Lord up on the front of church is because early on in the Christian growth of the church, the Christians were told they had to say Caesar's Lord. You know, and now in our culture, you know, people might say, you know, well, you know, money is Lord. If you get more money or you get position or fame or something else, that's going to... But no, don't believe that. Jesus is Lord. And, you know, sometimes there'll be parents who want you to say they are Lord, they're God. You do whatever, you know, they're saying, and there can be abuses of power. And sometimes you need to say, no, that's not right. Jesus is Lord. I follow him above all else. But in following him, that doesn't mean you dishonor your parents. You keep looking at in your heart and how you do it, how you speak to them in a way which honors them, and how you show respect. And sometimes I've, with people in the church, if their parents are really not being comfortable about them coming or maybe them getting baptized, I've said, well, just wait a while. Don't rush this. Let them see something in your life, or, you know, make sure that you, you know, you're doing this here in a way that's going to help journey them with you as much as possible. Now, sometimes that's not possible, and sometimes you might need to make a case for it and show why it's going to be good for you in a way that they understand. But I'd really encourage you to think about how you can still honor them in that. And talk to others in the youth group who might have that same challenge or situation. Talk to some of your youth leaders. I know there are people who are on the youth leadership team whose parents are not Christians and have tried to navigate some of that as well. So, is that okay?
That's really helpful. So we've talked a bit about parents, but you also mentioned your sisters and how you like to annoy them. I wondered if you had...
It's a confession, by the way, not an example to follow.
I think we probably all need to confess a bit of that if we've got siblings. But yeah, is it normal to find siblings annoying or even to hate them? I know some people really, really struggle with their dislike of siblings. Like, how are we supposed to treat them? How do we deal with that relationship?
Right. Let me. We talked about 1 John, and the bit we started in this whole series on relationships. And here's what I'm going to take you to in 1 John in just a moment. But you're not going to believe me. Is that it's normal to hate your brother? It's natural. In fact, because you're not perfect and they're not perfect, because they will tend to annoy you and you will tend to annoy them, and there'll be a bit of rivalry, and they might even do good things, and that will be the worst. It's when they're better than you. It will be normal not just to want to hate them, but to want to kill them. That's natural. That is completely normal sibling relationship for fallen men and women, and it's been like that since the first children, Cain and Abel. Cain didn't like what his brother was doing, so he killed him. And you look then through the children and the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren, and all through church history, and you see there's violence, there's hatred. It's not just annoyance. And so, guys, here's the reality. You might have siblings, and you find them a bit annoying. It probably could get worse. It may well get worse. And it's natural and normal to hate them. But it's not the Christian way. It's not the way of Christ. So in 1 John chapter 3, and if you've got a Bible, why don't you turn with me, but please go back and read this, because it's kind of mind-blowing stuff. Let me read to you from 1 John 3 verse 11, and this is what it says. For this is the message you heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. Do not be like Cain. Don't be like Cain, who belonged to the evil one and murdered his brother. Why did he murder him? Because his own actions were evil and his brothers were righteous. Do not be surprised, my brothers and sisters, if the world hates you. Don't be surprised if your brother or sister literally hates you. Don't be surprised if those feelings well up in you, because they are normal, sinful, natural. I say normal because the normal things are so often the natural things. But they're not normal for a Christian who's been filled with the Spirit. Because this is how it goes on. It says this. We know that we have passed from death to life because we love each other. So we know we've been transformed because we now love each other. Anyone who does not love remains in death. Anyone who hates a brother or sister. Listen to this. Anyone who hates a brother or sister is a murderer. And you know that no murderer has eternal life residing in him. So is it normal to hate your brother and sister? Yeah, it's very normal and natural and sinful, and just that's what happens. But hate leads to murder. And actually, that's the way of the world. And here is the amazing thing. God has done something in us which has turned us from just being normal people to being extraordinary spirit-filled, as God intended, from death to life people, living people. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. You see how different that is from Cain and Abel. So Cain hated his brother, so he killed him, whereas Jesus comes as the perfect son. The perfect son, and he lays down his life for his brothers, for those who hate him. For the people who are crucifying him, he says, Father, forgive them. That's the way of Christ. Now, that is not normal, is it? That's not normal. But it is Christian. It is Christian. It's normal Christian living. There's a great, powerful book by this guy, a Chinese guy, Watchman Nee. Is he Chinese, Steve? I'm just looking. Yeah, Chinese Christian. Watchman Nee. And it's the title, The Normal Christian Life. Is that right? And the normal Christian life is pretty radical. The normal Christian life is loving sacrificially your brother when they're annoying, your sister when they're annoying. It's forgiving them. It's patiently putting up with them. It's doing the stuff that Jesus does with us that is so countercultural, so unnormal. But I tell you what, it's the way to live. It's nothing like it. Because actually we think that we're going to feel better when we hate them and we annoy them and we punch them and we steal their toys and we make them feel like they're nothing and we push them away and we ignore them and we think we're going to feel better, but we don't. You know you don't. You actually feel better when you forgive them, when you show patience, when you think, you know what, I'm going to do something for them that will show that actually I love them. And that's why family is such a powerful thing, because you've got to live in close proximity with people. That's why it's so wonderful to have siblings who are annoying, is because it teaches you to be patient. You don't learn patience by never having to test it out. Is it normal? Yeah. And that's the chance then to really express your Christian faith. And so your family situation, your marriage, your relationship with your parents, these are testing grounds to grow in Christian faith like nothing else. The best testing grounds there are. Go for it. Be Christian. Follow Jesus. Receive his spirit. This is how 1 John continues on after saying that. If anyone hates his brother, he's a murderer. It goes on in 1 John 3 and says these amazing words. Here we go. You ready for this? It says this. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. If anyone has material possessions, game station, or your sort of toys, or your phone's working and your brother or sister's isn't. If anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? Wow. That's quite powerful for family life. Dear children, let us not love with words or speech, but in actions and in truth. This is how we know that we belong to the truth, and how we set our hearts at rest in his presence. If our hearts condemn us, we know that God is greater than our hearts, and he knows everything. Dear friends, if our hearts do not condemn us, we have confidence before God and receive from him everything we ask, because we keep his commands and do what pleases him. And this is his command. And you think it's going to be love your brother, but it isn't. It says this, to believe in the name of the Son he loves, Jesus Christ, and to love one another. Because if you don't get that first bit, if you're not drawing off his love, if you're not believing in Jesus, that he loved you sacrificially, that he was the perfect son, that there's none like him, if you don't believe that, you're never going to be able to love. That's why I love this little phrase that I heard once about, you know, let love pour into your life and love will pour out. Let love flow in and love will flow out. In your family situation with your brothers, you're going to need your sisters, because sisters can be just as annoying as brothers. You need to let the love of God flow into your life. You can say, God, give me your love today that I might be able to love them. And he will. He'll help you in it. So this is the command, to believe in the name of the Son, Jesus Christ, and to love one another as he commanded us. The one who keeps God's command lives in him and he in them. And this is how we know that he lives in us. We know by the spirit he gives us, because God has put his spirit in you so that you can live the normal Christian life, not just the normal life without Christ, but the normal Christian life, which is spirit-filled and is amazing and is beautiful. And you cannot do family life as God intended it without his spirit. Can I say that again? You cannot do family life as God intended it without his spirit. You need help to be a brother or a sister. Otherwise, you're going to make a hash of it. So keep getting more of God in your life.
Great. Is there anything that you'd say to people that are experiencing that kind of really serious kind of conflict in their family lives? So whether that's marriage breakdown or relationship breakdown, or maybe sometimes other siblings that get estranged from the parents and leave, and it's very painful. And have you got any advice for that?
Yeah, I think the advice I would say is dig deep into God, because those things are really painful and hard, and sometimes you can do your best, but it still doesn't sort them out. So I was chatting to a lady just before the service, and we were talking about a verse in Romans 12 where it says, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with all people. And I found that quite helpful, because sometimes we can want to be at peace with our parents or our siblings, but it's just not possible from our point of view, as it depends on us, because it requires something of them. And that can be really hard when you feel like someone's holding a grudge against you, someone's not treating you fairly, you're trying to love them, but they're just, you know, mocking you for it. And that's where you just got to keep forgiving and praying for them and trusting them into God's hands. And sometimes it's not the conflict with us. Sometimes we're in a situation where maybe our parents are fighting, And I remember times growing up with that. You know, great Christian parents, but, you know, sometimes pressures, they would, you know, there'd be tension. And, you know, I just sometimes thought, okay, well, I just need to pray for them. I encourage you, pray for your parents. You know, I'd just try and demonstrate practically that I could, you know, I love them. I also was taught really early on a verse that is a proverb that's really helped me with my relationships with my sisters, but it's also, if there's conflict with your parents, it's Proverbs 15 verse 1, and it says this, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stir up anger. That actually, if you're in a conflict situation, if you start speaking harshly, it escalates it. But if you speak and reply gently, then it diffuses it. And one of the things you see in Jesus relating to people is he was gentle. He was gentle. And that meant that as he related to people around him, brothers and sisters, as it were, and those who kind of sometimes didn't get him, that he was able to live as far as it was possible as it depended on him, at peace with people. Though often what you see in Jesus is that still meant people hated him. So that's also part of what we realize. But as we dig deep into God, we find a security in him as our Father and as the one who loves us that can mean even when there's conflict around us, we don't need to despair.
And last of all, I just want to talk a little bit about a phrase that we often use here at Holland Road, which is extended family. We talk about that as one of our key church values. And I wondered if you could just explain a little bit about what we mean by that when we say extended family, and how we should live in that way.
So you know what I was saying about how in your family, you know, it's one of the great places to grow as a Christian because you have to learn to love real people, not perfect people. You don't just love them on a Sunday, but you have to live with them at 6 o'clock at night when they're grumpy and they've had a stressful day at school or at work. You know, and that's actually where you grow in patience and you learn what it means to, you know, have to serve. You know, it's often a kind of, you know, mealtimes are great, but it's after the mealtime when someone's got to clean up. You know, it's that kind of stuff where so often, you know, there's a real potential to be Christian and to grow as a Christian. And so what this kind of vision is of being an extended family is recognizing that actually we don't just want to do Sundays together. We don't just want to do kind of the odd event together. We want to do family life together as a church. Now, the sense in which we want to do that as the whole church, but we are an extended family in that we're brothers and sisters in Christ, and God's our Father, and Jesus is like our older brother, and you know we're all different generations, and I think that's one of the wonderful things about Holland Road that we need to learn from one another. But we also have kind of communities which are like extended families on mission. They're trying to demonstrate by their love for one another what it is to be Christian. And that's one of the ways Jesus said that we demonstrate our love for each other. And I think in our Western culture particularly, we've lost something of extended family. I think that it's one of the things that's really badly broken in Brighton, in the UK. And what we lose then is we become a ghetto. We just relate to our peers. You know, you just relate to people your own age. Whereas actually in family life and in extended family life, you're relating to people older, younger than you, the next generation, your grandparents, and church should be like that. Not just kind of come on a Sunday and we go into our different places, but actually there's something about us relating to each other and learning because folks who are older here, you've got to learn stuff from the younger people. Jesus said, hey, look, he brought the children into the midst and said, unless you become like these, you're never going to enter the kingdom of heaven. And younger folks here, you know, don't see children here, but I see younger folks, if you relate to the older folks in a way which recognizes, as the Bible teaches us, that we can, there's wisdom there and experience and things that we can learn from each other, and there needs to be a respect that's given. If you realize that there's kind of pearls of wisdom that you would not even begin to imagine that some of these folks around you have got, then actually we grow together. And it's a beautiful picture. So one of the cool things in our little community, we had some time this afternoon together, and We go to the pub once a month, and we had actually visitors around for lunch. So we didn't all go as a family as we usually do, but I said, hey, I'm just going. And Amy said, my middle daughter said, hey, I want to come, because she loves those times. And they're very much a part of the community, our kids as well. And so we went along together, and then a few others came. Some of those who came are, you know, single people who are sort of that generation older than me. So they're like grandparents to the kids, you know. And we're just playing a game together and chatting. And it's special because it's doing life in a way that honors. And the bartender and his spouse and now their newborn baby, they're watching it. They're watching it. And we've got to know them over time, and they're coming across. And the spouse, Anna, she's called, she's introducing and hanging out with us and asking, you know, my daughter her name now, because I've learned their daughter's name, and I'm saying how fast they grow up. And they're seeing this kind of odd thing, which is the church doing community and extended family in a way that's broken in our society. And so, guys, I just want to encourage you. You're part of this church family. You're a special part, whether you're young here or old here. And each one has a part to play. And we need each other, and we need to love one each other. And that will not be easy, because I'm not perfect. You're not perfect. Your neighbor's not perfect. There's someone sitting next to you is going to wind you up one day. And that is great, because it's an opportunity for you to forgive them and learn patience and bear with them and love them and serve them. And that's family. And that is a beautiful picture of the Trinity. It's a beautiful picture of God in relationship, because, you know, God reveals himself as Father, and then Jesus reveals himself as the Son, and the Son says to his disciples, he says this, which takes us right back to where to start. He says, the world must learn that I do everything exactly what my Father said. That's how big a deal this kind of obedience to your parents and the honor your father is, that Jesus says, the world must learn that I do exactly what my Father says. And then he kind of says, look, hey, I want my brothers to be with me. I want these folks to be around me. And so he reaches out to broken people. And even one of the things I've been thinking about the last couple of, and I'll end with this, this week after Easter, I've been thinking about some of Jesus' resurrection appearances. And you know, one of the ones I love is when Jesus goes he goes to the disciples, and particularly to Peter, because Peter said to the disciples, hey, you know, let's go fishing, let's go back to Galilee, and we'll just hang out there. And they kind of haven't seen Jesus much. They've seen him a bit, but it's like still probably questions going on. And Peter knows that he denied Jesus those three times, so it's kind of like, you know, how are things really going to be? And often we feel like we've blown it. We've blown it in family, we've blown it in our relationship with God. And Jesus, the perfect older brother, he appears on the beach and he calls out to them. And he says, hey, throw your nets down. And they catch this amazing fish. And Peter says, it's the Lord. And he knows that just as Jesus has moved towards him, he's now got to move towards Jesus. And he dives off the boat and he swims to shore. And Jesus has cooked him breakfast and the others. And then he kind of says, hey, I've got a part for you to play. And I want to encourage you in that simple thing to know that Jesus is moving towards you tonight. The perfect older brother. And he's reaching out and saying, hey, come look, I've fixed it, I've sorted it, I can help you. And he wants you to then be someone who moves towards people, who moves towards your annoying brother and your annoying sister, who moves towards the people in the church who are different from you or older from you, who moves towards a broken world, that we might have other brothers and sisters come and be part of this church family. So what we have seen displayed in God, in Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, we then, by the help of the Spirit, live out. And that is what it means to be extended family on mission, and it's cool.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, David. Should we just thank David for his great answers?